Hello, everyone. Welcome to TechNet Radio. My name is Kevin Remde. I'm a senior technical evangelist with the U.S. Developer Experience team at Microsoft. And fortunately enough, I'm your TechNet Radio host today. Now, this discussion is part two of our three-part series on Windows Server 2003. Yes, I said 2003. That's old news. Well, yeah, that's the point.
I thought this was a 2012 show. No?
No, this is 2003. Okay. We've been talking about this looming end of support, and we got this very long-in-the-tooth server operating system. And, of course, if you were following us in part one, we did discuss some of the implications of what end of support means. Well, today in part two, we're going to be covering and briefly introducing you to some of the best practices, some resources that are going to help you move from Server 2003 to a more modern supported operating system. Now, my guest today, as you've already seen and you recognize the green hat, this is Rick Klaus. Rick is a senior program manager on the Microsoft Corp DX team. Rick, thanks for coming.
Hey, man. Thanks for having me. It's my first time on TechNet Radio. I've been listening to these guys forever. I can't believe I'm finally a guest.
So we're finally, and we're so happy to have you with us. So,
and what a subject, man. It's 2003, end of life.
Oh, I know it. I know it. Some people might have missed part one. So okay. I just want to maybe ask you right up front, what's going on with Server 2003? I mean, why the big fuss?
Well, you have to mark your dates, right? Mark the dates, put in the calendar. It's in big blinking numbers inside my calendar. As fact, as I actually go to one of the pages, there's a countdown timer someone has on there. And I think at the time of recording this, it's about 39 days, 9 hours, 52 minutes, and 27 seconds left until what's known as end of life for a particular product. Now, it doesn't mean that we're going to have a funeral procession and we're going to take all the box software and roll it out the window or anything like that. The way I like to kind of explain this is that literally, it's a life cycle. Software's been around for a very, very long time. Microsoft has a very well-established and actually quite well-respected support life cycle for how long we support software. And by support, that actually means that we maintain it, we patch it, we update it, and we give support for it. And so generally, you get 5 years mainstream and then 2 years extended. And in extended time frame, basically, you just have patches and hotfixes. And then after that 7 years is done, it's over. It's right. Done. Like it no longer is able to be patched and updated. I will kind of put a little asterisk on that, just because there is the possibility to do a purchased support through Microsoft Premier Services and with Microsoft Consulting Services. It's extremely complex. It's very cumbersome. It's like, in my opinion, like the last resort for which you should basically look at. Most people that I've been talking to have already taken the steps and are starting the process or have already finished the process of moving off of 2003. So it's a natural part of the life cycle. It just kind of happens. And I mean, I like to say if you had a dog when 2003 came out, it probably would be dead by now.
Yeah.
It's a very old operating system. I mean, I got my kicks and started on 2000 way before this, actually NT4 side of things. But 2003 was rock solid for what it needed to be do, right? Ran the apps, make things work, lots of web servers out there, lots of file servers and stuff. But it's just some people still have some legacy applications that are on it that we need to help them get off and at least make them aware of all the different implications of trying to maintain it and run it themselves. Because July 14th, patches will stop coming, security updates will no longer be available for it, and basically we're in a very dangerous situation at that point.
Right, and compliance becomes an issue then as well for people that need to be compliant. They have to be on a supported operating system.
Yeah. Huge deal, especially if you're in any kind of an environment where the application you might be running has to go off and talk to credit card processing systems, as an example, that sort of stuff. Your solution, if that's part of it with 2003, will no longer be in compliance, and you will no longer be able to do those kind of transactions anymore.
Yeah, well, I like how we measure our operating systems live in dog ears now. That's good. Now, let's talk about supported hardware. For the purpose of this discussion, let's assume that we want to move from Server 2003 to the most current version of our operating system and servers, which is Server 2012 R2. And I want to know, is my existing hardware going to support Server 2012 R2?
That's a good one, man. I'm going to have to give you, for a lot of the questions we're probably going to be doing today, I'm going to be giving you my consulting, well, it depends kind of answer. So, yes, it does depend. 2003 is rather unique because most of the install base was running on x86 hardware, 32-bit hardware. And there are no 32-bit versions of 2012 and 2012 R2. It's only available on 64-bit. And so more than likely, if it's that old and you're still in the original hardware, you've gotten your money's worth, and it's no longer going to be able to run the more modern stuff because it's a 64-bit operating system. So unless it's a more recent version of hardware that you've happened to migrate and reinstall throughout the years, and it does support 64-bit, in which case it would be able to run. However, doing an upgrade process, which we'll talk about probably later on, I'm sure you're going to ask that question coming up later on, there is no direct upgrade process because you can't go from a 32-bit install over to magically inserting the disk and then getting a 64-bit install.
That indeed was my very next question. I was going to ask about the whole upgrade piece of it.
No, so that's just psychic today. I can just tell.
It's got to be the hat. Yeah. I mean, that is the issue then. If I have existing hardware, I'm not going to be doing, as you mentioned, an in-place upgrade because of that whole 32-bit to 64-bit, or even if it was a 64-bit installation, we don't have that option to go directly to the newest.
Right.
So, okay.
So what some people have done that I've been talking to is they've done an interim upgrade from 2003 to 2008. More realistic of what I've seen, which is much more effective, is they look at it from the perspective of what can I do for a migration of the data and then do a clean install. And then migrate the data over. And so depending on what kind of service, what kind of role we're talking about, that is either very easy because it might be just like a file server as an example, or it might be slightly more complex where it's things like Active Directory, or one of the ones that's a big sticking point for some people is certificate services on 2003. For Active Directory and that sort of stuff, it's a little bit kind of what I call the shell game that can take place where you can actually bring everything over and across just by injecting and bringing in a 2012 server into the environment and then promoting it and doing the shuffle of different FISMA roles and stuff like that, and then removing the legacy 2003 boxes out of the domain controller role, and then you essentially had just upgraded your Active Directory to 2012. Yeah. But for the most part, you have to look at how am I going to migrate my data off and over. Not clean installs for everything from scratch, but simply clean installs for the OS, existing domain stays the same, which is the most complex part, and then migrating the data over after that.
And, you know, as you said, it depends upon the role, depends on what, you know, how complex or how simple it's going to be. And we do have some tools that can assist with that, and we'll talk about some of those in just a minute. But let's talk about the planning, because, you know, one of the things, of course, first thing we need to do is understand what we have. And I think a lot of companies, because the infrastructure gets to be so large, they may have lost track of what's actually there that they need to be addressing. I think we do have some tools that can assist with that, correct?
Yes, our ever-famous and continually evolving Microsoft Assessment Toolkits, or the MAP tool, is probably the go-to tool that I would be using for an initial scan of what's going on and out there. If you're not familiar with this, the MAP tool literally is a matter of install the application on a particular reference machine. That reference machine has to be part of your network and part of your domain. You have to have the proper security credentials that are on it. And then you go off and you run it, and it does a scan of your environment, checks the operating systems that are out there, checks the roles and the servers, checks to find out what clients are registered with DNS and DHCP and that sort of stuff, and does a bunch of little interrogation back and forth. It's not one of those things where you want to run like at 8 o'clock in the morning when everyone's signing on. You want to kind of leave it till later in the day when it's quieter, but you still have the machines actively available and on. And it's also able to go off and interrogate not just the physical machines, but also the virtual machines running on top of your existing virtualization environment. And that kind of gives you like an inventory, a recommendation for what's out there, and recommendation for being able to say you should upgrade to this because you have X number of 2008 R2 servers, or you have X number of 2003 servers, and here's some tools you can use to be able to go off and to upgrade. It gives you the what I like to call like the little auto-generated white paper that you can like pass to the business people to say, hey, here's our current status of boxes that are currently on right now that I've seen over the last couple of days. Here's the ones that are the most at risk that we need to go off and migrate off of. Here's the things that are running on them that we may not have even known were running on them that we need to take care of. Right. And kind of gives you a plan to work forward to target those hot systems to be able to move them off. So the MAP toolkit's probably the first tool that I like to talk about for sure.
Yeah, yeah. Well, so if anyone's interested in that, we have a very easy-to-use link, and we're going to put these links on the page where you found this video, so you can find these links at a later date as well. Yeah. But the simple one to remember is aka.ms/map. That'll get you right to the
right to the right spot. I don't have a nice short link for this one here, but I don't know if this came up on the last show or on or other discussion you guys have had. Right from the product page on Microsoft.com, if you go down through what's the URL, down through cloud server products, you can still select 2003, and it basically takes you to this one landing page saying, hey, time's a ticking. That's where the countdown clock is for how many hours and days are left. But they actually have a bunch of links and resources that are on there, and one of them is actually called the Migration Assistance. Or if I can find my right tab to make sure I'm talking about the right thing here. Yes.
Well, actually, I do. And I actually do have a link for you on that one, too. So we'll come up. That'll come up toward the end here.
Okay.
But no problem. I
like that one there just because it's web-based and up-to-date, right? So things constantly change and update. You basically can go up there and get some more directed resources to it to be able to go off and do some scans and updates and advice.
Yeah, awesome. Yeah, I'll share that URL at the end here, too. But, yeah, really good set of resources and white papers from IDC and Gartner on Server 2003 migration advice and so on. So, yeah, good stuff. So let's talk then about the migration itself. So let's say I've done the inventory, I understand what I have, I know where the problems may exist, and I've figured out ways to get around those. So I'm ready to do the migration either to physical or virtual. What tools then do we have to help me to move some of these more common workloads over?
So it's one of those it depends questions. Based on your results of what you still have running on the 2003 level, it's going to be more or less complex. I briefly alluded to the one about Active Directory because there really is no migration tool for it other than simply moving to a brand new directory as opposed to keeping your existing. If you want to keep your existing, which is by far the easiest, but slightly more shell game, have to move pieces around, you basically are going to be using just the nature of how you can do multiple domains, controllers from different operating system versions together and coexisting inside the same domain. And then, like I said, move roles between them as far as the FSMA roles are concerned and some other things like that. And you have to repeat that new domain controller implementation for every single one of your sites that has 2003 domain controllers that are out there. I've actually got a session that I did, not at the last Microsoft Ignite, but at the Tech Ed prior to that, that I did with a good friend of mine, Andrew McMurray from Australia. We did like a four-part series on migrating from 2003 and 2008. And in there, we actually went through in good detail for about 75 minutes just on the Active Directory piece, because you want to also look at possibly re-architecting how you do your Active Directory to use server core implementations as opposed to server full implementations and things like that. So I'll make sure they're in the notes for you guys to be able to reference those ones. They're on that that migration planning tool page that I mentioned earlier. Built into 2008 R2 is when they first made their debut, and they're still there for 2012 and 2012 R2, are the migration tools. And so the migration tools are actually built in the operating system. You just go into add or remove features and then choose under the features the migration tools. And it's a series of PowerShell scripts that do a bunch of different things. They can basically identify which roles are on the servers that need to be moved. Things like DHCP, things like file services and print services, stuff like that, and then allows you to go through and extract the data, put it into a holding area, if you will, like a file share, and then import that data on the new box running 2012, and they have prescriptive guidance on each one of those steps for how to be able to go off and do it. And when it's doing file server migration for the files, it'll actually go through and look at the ACLs and the scans and the entries that are inside those ACLs and make sure that the groups, like local groups that have been created, are recreated on the new box and then cross-populates the proper global groups inside those locals. Because typically with file servers, you would have globals inside locals to be able to secure things if you're following the best practices for doing things. So it covers an awful lot. And those tools have matured over the two or three revisions that they've been out. And they're quite robust for what they do. And they handle the weird one-off ones like your DNS infrastructure or your DHCP infrastructure and things like that. Some of the more particular roles, like I mentioned, certificate services, there is documentation on the TechNet libraries about how to migrate a 2003 certificate server over to 2008 or 2012 for how you do that. It gets a little bit more complex if that happens to be a domain controller, but there is guidance on how to do that. It's not too difficult, just some extra steps you have to worry about. And those ones aren't part of the migration tools, but like I mentioned, they're documented at least inside the TechNet library for how to move those individual roles and what's coming up. And I think that's kind of covered it for most of the roles that I'm aware of that have the most problems. Active Directory, file servers, print servers. Oh, yeah, the print server tools. Again, there is some functionality for group migration and IP address migration from the built-in migration tools, but you're actually going to be using good old-fashioned print manager, the MMC mm-hmm. snap-in, to be able to go ahead and to do some of those migrations and recreations of the queues. And then, obviously, there's a good third-party plug here for a variety of third-party tools that are out there that do migrations of stuff from 2003, so our partners have built some good selections as well to be able to go off new migrations, and they're referenced as well on some of these reference websites we'll be talking about a little later on.
Very good. And, of course, then other applications, other products outside of Microsoft's domain, you'd have to talk to that application vendor in terms of how to move it or if it's supported. But beyond that, it sounds like we're doing a good job of at least giving resources, if not some tooling, to help the migration of Microsoft-based resources. And as you said, there's tools or there's even functions in DHCP that can help, backing up your DHCP configuration mm-hmm. and restoring it on another machine or doing the same with the print print services and so on. So, awesome. Sir.
The TechNet library definitely has, under the product areas, the documentation about the migration tools, which are the PowerShell scripts. If you do see an option for being able to do a migration using the PowerShell scripts versus using, like as you mentioned, like the backup option with DHCP, I would test both of those inside your lab environment to see what's more successful for you. Because I found that the PowerShell scripts work really well in certain versions of things, for instance, DHCP migration, whereas if I use the backup and the restore, which you think would be perfectly fine, that was like a 75% functionality worked or didn't work. Actually, it lost some leases. Not a big deal, because DHCP, the nature, you just get into their address again. But I didn't have the same results when I was using the migration tools. So the migration tools does a little bit of it does a backup piece, but then also does some PowerShell stuff and some registry stuff, and it does it all in a nice little command line. So it does, in my opinion, does a better job.
I understand some there are actually some limitations or some performance issues to be aware of also with regard to migration of file services. I mean, if it's a real simple installation, maybe not a huge amount of files, then the tools to do the migration using a HTTP tunnel, just basically sending files across, that works okay. But if it's a very, very large installation, you might be aware of that.
Yeah, sometimes it might actually be best. Again, some third-party tools are out there that actually do a very good job of being able to move stuff. And likewise, if you're dealing with large amounts of data that's inside, like shared storage, as an example, you can just like disconnect and then reconnect that storage over without even having to do any migration. So double-check, obviously, your configuration for how you want to do that.
Yeah, very good point. And if anyone's interested in finding those server migration tools, I've actually have we have a portal that you can go to, server migration portal. You can actually find that, aka.ms/server migration. We'll bring you right to that portal. It has links to the various recommendations and best practices around the various roles, and there's a nice long list of URLs that you can click on or links that you can click on to bring you right to the topic that you're interested in as far as migration.
Yeah, and they get some great hot links there, as you mentioned, directly into the technical documentation for migration of each of those individual roles that we just talked about. Some great links for both 2012 and 2012R2. Yeah. Very, very cool stuff.
Now, does this task, and I think you kind of answered it earlier, but I just want to ask it again. Do you think this task becomes easier with virtualization, or does this add more complexity? it depends.
I'm actually going to say it's a double-edged sword this time. This one here, it does depend, yes. But there have been some vendors that are out there that are basically saying, "Hey, don't worry, 2003 is end of life. Just migrate it to us. We'll look after it. Just go ahead and virtualize that physical box, and we'll look after it." That last part that they say, "We'll look after it," is the catch. Just because the OS is able to be virtualized and running on a different platform or on a cloud service or whatever it happens to be, doesn't mean it's supported. It just means that it's now running in a different location. You still have the same problems with security patches, hotfixes and updates not being available and stuff like that. So be very aware that it's not just a matter of getting off of the hardware. It actually still is unsupported as far as an operating system is concerned in wherever it is it happens to be, again, unless you have some kind of extra special support agreement because you happen to have contracts or you happen to have engagements with other people. So be very, very wary of what that is about. It does significantly speed things up just because of, again, you're fast forwarding, 12, 13 years of time to go to use virtualization now. Virtualization back in the 2003 days was basically like the virtual PC world of a Ring 3 level hypervisor, which really was just like an application in user mode that was able to simulate a PC and simulate hardware. It's not really virtualization, but it works. It's more of like a container, if anything else. Mm-hmm. But now with hypervisors that are running a modern hypervisors, both on-premises and on-cloud, you can definitely spin up machines very, very quick and spin up resources very, very quick. And it definitely speeds up the deployment of new images. The trick is, again, having to move the data from the old image, which is on a physical machine, over to the virtual image of the new machine to be able to get it up and going. Once you're on that newer hardware and you have upgraded the newer OSs, virtualization is like 2x, 3x fold as far as impressive capabilities, which you can do with things like, example, for that Active Directory thing. So you've got 10 sites that are running Active Directory, and you have 10 domain controllers that are 2003. You got to very quickly spin up 10 domain controllers that are running 2012. You go through the shell game process that I alluded to earlier, which is inside those TechEd resources that I can mention later on. And you need to be able to spin up your first 2012 domain controller, 2012 R2 domain controller, which is a manual process. But once that one is up and running, you basically can take that one that's now up and running in 2012 R2 mode. Once your Active Directory is in 2012 R2 mode or 2012 mode as well, you basically can go and you can clone those machines 9 times. And you can actually, in 2012 R2, clone a domain controller, have it up and running in a matter of minutes, and then decommission the old 2003 boxes, as opposed to the old way of doing it, which would have been a very manual process, a couple hours per machine based on your size and based on your hardware. Would be very, very difficult and more cumbersome to do. So definitely virtualization can speed things up. It's not the silver bullet to be able to end all, be all the problems. So be aware of the snake oil that some people might be selling. And be aware that it's definitely just one more tool in your toolbox to help out with your deployment side.
Yeah, it definitely becomes a matter of what they mean when they say support. And
yes.
Different companies have different definitions of what that means. When Microsoft says support, they mean from top to bottom support of the operating system. And
We back it up, right? It's there. It's going. Absolutely. It's good. We got your back. But just because it is supported and means it runs, doesn't mean it really is supported by the operating system owner, for sure.
So what about an application that I have? I'm a company that's been running this application for years and years. Maybe the application is not going to be supported on a newer operating system, or perhaps isn't supported at all. Maybe that company went away, and now we're running it on hardware. We're not sure if it'll run anything newer. What options do I have there?
This is probably the last mile. You know, they talk about the last mile for telecommunications, last mile for different deployment of high-speed networks even and things like that. This is probably the most difficult part. It comes down to having to understand, first of all, do your due diligence and as you mentioned, track down, is the app still around? Is the company still around? Have they been bought out 2 or 3 times by somebody else? Do they have any kind of migration that can take you to a newer one? But it comes down to generally having to buy the newest version, if you can find it, that is on a supported operating system. Because more than likely, that application probably isn't supported by that vendor anymore. But they might have translation tools or migration and data migration tools from older versions to newer versions. When I talk to customers about this, sometimes they're hesitant about it because it's like, well, you know, I bought this once and I bought it 12 years ago and I don't want to buy it again. But the analogy that I use is, you know, when you buy a telephone system like a PBX or something like that, generally speaking, if you've bought a PBX 12 years ago, you've probably replaced it at least once since then because components die, they're no longer supported, and you basically have to continue your investment. You definitely got your return back for being able to use that software. But for the most part, you are going to have to go in and figure out how to get that off of the old system and move it over to the new one. And that is going to require more due diligence and more research to be able to get it done. The next thing that's coming around is obviously going to be things like supporting runtimes are no longer going to be supported on operating systems as well, like SQL Server 2005 as an example. Very popular database engine that was used on a lot of third-party applications as a runtime. That one there is going to be coming up for end of life in the not-too-distant future as well. And so, again, those applications that you'd be able to find that are out there that are still hangers-on to different areas, they are going to have to be researched to figure out how to be able to move that data off to go someplace else because it's no longer supported.
So hopefully the vendors around, they can help you with the migration to a newer
vendors
version.
Around,
Maybe, but if it's not, you might have to consider another solution.
Another solution, take a look at it. Maybe look at a SaaS-type solution up in the cloud environments. Like I know some people had a lot of very customized old CRM-type solutions, customer relationship management solutions. And, you know, you can export that data out of the application, import it into, you know, Dynamics CRM if it's a Microsoft side, and Salesforce.com if it's Salesforce One, like whichever it happens to be. We want to make sure that your data is protected and safe and secure and no longer running on this old thing. But there's lots of options to be able to go off and look at export and import into other locations, other areas. There's actually on that resource page that you have mentioned and that I called to as well from the main product page, there's a link to an ISV connection, if you will, where you can actually find a list of the different ISVs from the programs from the day and age that we've already been working with. And so it's getting kind of late now, but during the early stages of this program, you could have actually identified the different software vendors that you may have had critical pieces of software purchased from that were not running on current versions, and they had no plans to, and we could have connected and worked with them as Microsoft to be able to try to help them out to get them up to speed on using new options to be able to come up with new revisions. But I'm willing to bet that most of the apps that are out there, if you do your research, you will find there are more modern versions that do run on more modern operating systems, in which case it's simply a data migration issue.
Yeah. Good stuff, Rick. Now, as we're just wrapping up here, I just want to make sure we get an opportunity to let people know again where those resources are at. I know we've mentioned a bunch of URLs, but let's kind of summarize with some of those resources that will help people move from Server 2003.
Sure, man. The one that comes up a lot that are out there, obviously, for being able to go off and find stuff and look at stuff is AK8MS. I think AK8MS/Server 2003 is the one that will take you off to the main page that I was referencing, the long way of being able to find it. So I'm glad this is a short reference for the short URL for that one there, AK8MS/Server 2003. From there, you basically will have the countdown clock, which is a little terrifying to see sometimes because of how close it's coming. But they basically break it down into how you would approach this like a consultant. You've got four phases to your migration project. The discover, assess, target, and migrate, as an example. And I'll note that those videos that I was talking about that were at previous Tech Ed sessions that are quite good. I'm a little biased because I was in them.
Well, of course.
It's under the second category of under assess, where basically you have to learn about what is available, what your options are, and how you go off and move them. That's there's a bunch of direct links. All four sessions are listed there under that page. But under the discover side, they have links to the assessment planning toolkit. They also have links to some demos around how to do a migration and also some white papers, as you mentioned, the resources from Gartner and IDC. Then under targeting size, they have the ability to go off and obviously build your lab to be able to how to build a lab to test some of these migrations, access to samples and trials to go off and use Azure as a possible solution for some of those applications, and also signing up for things like Office 365 and some other options. And then also under Migrate, they have resources that are from our good friends over at Microsoft Virtual Academy for people that have done courses around specifically migration. And also how to design new environments that might be more of a hybrid type environment for your on-premises data center to go up and to talk to Azure or go up to talk to other cloud services that are there as well. So very, very good resources up there. Plus also links off to some other white papers and other resources as well. That's my favorite one personally.
Fantastic. Good. Well, we'll leave it at that then. And we'll make sure those links are on the page where you found this video. So that does it for this part two session. All of you, thank you very much for joining us today. Make sure you continue on this journey. Make sure you take advantage of these tips and resources. Join us in part three. We're going to be specifically talking about the implications for small to mid-sized businesses. We'll talk about some more of the benefits around Server 2012 R2. Rick, as always, thanks again for some great information. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me on. I can't believe I finally made it, and looking forward to the next one.
All right, super. And we'll see you all again soon for another edition of TechNet Radio.